FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and it is August 21st, 2017, the day of the eclipse. Well, it looks like our politics are getting a bit of an eclipse as well. And here to discuss is John Rubino. And by the way, don't forget, email us at kl@kerrylutz.com. kl@kerrylutz.com. A little bit behind right now. I apologize to those of you who've written, but the volume has been pretty crushing. John, good morning.
Morning, Kerry. Yeah, let's talk civil unrest today. That's something we don't cover very often in our talks. Mm-hmm. But the last week was pretty fascinating, really, because we had all of a sudden what might be called white supremacist movements springing up around the country and going public, or might be called something else. You know, I'm not sure how you define the guys who showed up in Charlottesville, for instance, to protest the taking down of a statue of Robert E. Lee. But one of the interesting offshoots and outcomes of the turmoil in Charlottesville and elsewhere is that this is the first time we've had a lot of civil unrest combined with social media. In other words, everybody's got a phone that they can film this stuff with, which means everybody's face is on social media. Everybody who shows up at one of these rallies is kind of outing themselves in public as being part of this movement, whatever it is. And a lot of people are getting fired now from Charlottesville. The guys who marched.
Good for them.
With the neo-Nazis. You know, not everybody there was a white supremacist or a neo-Nazi, but, you know, if you march in the same parade as people like that, you kind of get tarred.
You lie down with fleas.
Painted with the same brush.
You lie down with fleas, so you're going to get bitten.
Yeah. Yeah. And so people are getting fired for that. And today Bloomberg has an article titled, "Can You Fire Someone for Being a White Supremacist?" And that's a really interesting idea or question from a First Amendment point of view, from a civil liberties point of view. You know, can your views on what is a non-work related matter be so repugnant that someone can legally fire you? Mm-hmm. I think we'll find that out pretty soon. The ACLU, at least initially, came down on the side of the right of these guys to march and to express their opinions and everything. And now we'll see where they come down on the right of employers to fire somebody for what is constitutionally protected speech. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I see both sides of this. You know, it's not not a great thing to have people with really extreme views working in your company because they become a really divisive force. Because a lot of people will who work beside them aren't going to like those views once they become public. On the other hand, you're allowed to say this stuff under the Constitution. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out from a constitutional standpoint. I think we will find out pretty soon, because at least one legal case, you know, is going to be generated by this stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to work with these people. You know, they're repugnant. On the other hand, if they want to live on a farm and go demonstrate, you know, they got a right to do it. But in Charlottesville, the cops were deliberately told to stand down to let the Antifa, who are just as bad as them, their left-wing social justice warriors, they were carrying baseball bats and sticks, and they were masked. And that shouldn't be allowed. You should not allow masked demonstrators. But Terry McAuliffe, the governor of Virginia, great friend of the Clintons, great enabler, you know, I think he poured gasoline on the fire. And the guy Kessler, who's running this show, very short while ago, was a member of Occupy Wall Street. So I think this thing was contrived. I think it's just like what happened in Ferguson, where that guy was killed. And Michael Brown, the gentle giant, after he had done a strong arm robbery, after the cop had pulled him aside and he attacked the cop and tried to get his gun, a lot of these things are contrived by these left wingers to marginalize the right, not just the extreme right, but the right who oppose their policies, and to help squelch debate in the court of public opinion. So we can't talk about these things because some people might riot. Therefore, we can't talk about anything, and we just have to accept the left's whole contrivance on the way things should be handled in society.
Well, I think there's so many interesting angles to this, one of which is timing. Why now? You know, why are the fringes of political society suddenly, you know, standing up and flexing their muscles? And why is the middle so unable to moderate the behavior of the people on the fringes?
Good question.
And I think you can, you can take it back to finance. We've screwed up our financial lives to the point where the system doesn't work anymore. And so we're creating more and more angry people on the fringes of the economy. So it's natural that those people who see themselves marginalized and see their lives basically slipping away from them are becoming more and more angry and more willing to speak out in extreme ways. And since if you accept that a big part of this is financial, then the fact that we're not fixing our finances in any meaningful way, and we continue to borrow huge amounts of money, and we continue to keep interest rates at artificially low levels so regular people can't save or can't make any money on their savings, this is going to continue. Our finances are going to continue to deteriorate, and the politics is going to be pulled along. In other words, the middle is going to shrink and the fringes are going to grow going forward. And we'll see more and more of this kind of civil unrest where the dividing line becomes really clear between these two groups, and they show up at the same rallies. And so we get this kind of violence maybe magnified going forward. And there really is no solution in a system where the First Amendment still holds. You know, if people are allowed to speak their minds and they're becoming radicalized, then you get Charlottesville's going forward, maybe on a much bigger scale, with no real way to do anything about it. Because if you're not fixing the finances that are at the base of it, then you're not going to be able to fix it. There's no election that solves the problems that bubbled up in Charlottesville. There's really no public policy solution to any of this because we borrowed so much money that we're basically stuck in a box, where we just have a choice of financial crises and no middle way that gets us out painlessly. So this, Carrie, is at what, year 6 or 7 of a recovery. Yeah. Imagine what it's going to be like in the next recession, because the central banks of the world, which have pushed interest rates down to insanely low levels, will have no choice but to respond to the next recession with even lower interest rates, which means your bank account's going to get a negative return. They're going to charge you to have money in the bank, which means you can't make any money on your savings. You can't build capital if you're, a regular working class person going to work every day and trying to build something for your family. You know, they take that option away from you. People are going to be thrown out of work because that's the way it always happens in recessions. So if you were, you know, working at two jobs and barely getting by and very angry because of that today, imagine what it's going to be like when you lose one or both of your jobs in the next recession and nobody has a solution for you. Nobody has any kind of a policy that they can point to that will fix your life going forward. You're going to get even angrier. That's what we have to look forward to. And you can trace it all back to Richard Nixon in 1971, taking us off the gold standard.
Yeah, among other people. You could go to FDR too, right?
Oh yeah. You can go all the way back to 1913 and the formation of the Federal Reserve, and that's a legitimate place to start, I guess. But as of the time that Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971, U.S. finances and global finances were actually in pretty decent shape. You know, we didn't have a lot of debt to GDP relative to today.
Yeah.
And since that time. And there wasn't a huge disparity between rich and poor. relative to today. So you can, you know, pull up a chart, and all the dysfunction financially kind of starts in the 1970s and just accelerates from there. You know, debt to GDP starts to soar, and the disparity between incomes of rich people and non-rich people really starts to widen until today. You get, a historic gulf between rich and poor in the U.S. All the wealth that we created in the last 20 years went to the top 1% of the population, and virtually none of it went to the lower half of the population in terms of income and wealth. And so, of course, you get political unrest in a situation like that. And, you know, this is a French Revolution scenario starting to play out here, where someday you get the storming of the Bastille and guillotines. Literal or metaphorical, being used to straighten things out.
So yeah, well, I think, you know, look at the Bastilles there. Our Bastilles, we got way too many people in them who don't belong there for victimless crimes and other such notions. And, you know, it was a side issue in the campaign, the presidential campaign this year. But basically, both candidates agreed that the system's way out of control and that major reform was necessary. Of course, I don't see it happening yet, but they did it. That was like the one thing they agreed on. To me, major issue, but now it's been all but forgotten.
So are you talking about prison reform there, Kerry?
Yeah, prison reform, criminal justice reform. Like, just, most of the people in there are in there for drugs. So what does that tell you, you know?
You can make a completely legitimate case for saying that our drug laws are really voter suppression laws. they're designed to put black people in jail and for felonies and then bar them from voting in the future, you know? And it certainly looks like that's the case. So, our drug laws are obviously a huge civil rights issue for everybody, but mostly for the people who are being imprisoned, and they're predominantly people of color. Mm-hmm. So the libertarian solution, obviously, is to say, whatever you want to in your body. You know, it's your body. You want to screw it up by ODing on drugs? So be it. You know, live with the consequences, but we won't interfere with your right to do what you want to do with your own body. Drugs should be legal, and the prisons should be largely emptied out of drug offenders. And some of the money that you save by doing that can then go to drug treatment. So if you want to get help because you are substance dependent, you can go to someplace without stigma who will help you get off drugs. You know, that's a way saner system and a way more financially viable system, you know, because we save all the money that we're losing right now by incarcerating more people than any other country in the world. You know, China has 4 or 5 times our population. They don't have anything like our prison population.
India too, you know? Well, it's all out of control here, what they've done. It's really just created a horrible situation. And it's not just the cost of incarceration, but law enforcement and judicial. Man, we could close half the courts and probably lay off half the cops if there was no war on drugs, or at least use the police for what they're supposed to be, peace officers, right?
Yes. Yeah. You know, the resources that are now being used to enforce idiotic drug laws could be deployed in really positive ways if we just did that. And we would also help Mexico, because right now, they're living a nightmare in Mexico because of the drug cartels battling the government and each other and killing people just wholesale, especially on the borders. And that's due to our appetite for their drugs. If we legalized everything, we'd put the cartels out of business and create new industries in the U.S. You know, the weed industry, marijuana right now, is booming. Mm-hmm. Because a few states have made marijuana legal. So you're seeing a free market spring up out of basically nothing, out of thin air. And it's fascinating to watch from an economics 101 standpoint. You know, this is what you would expect when you take a clearly defined need and then allow people to satisfy that need creatively. You know, that's what you've got with the newborn, newly legal marijuana industry.
Hey, well, there's a show on Netflix that if you have a chance to, you should watch, called Ozark. And it deals with a guy who's, I don't want to do too many spoilers here, but he's basically forced to relocate his family to the Ozarks because he's involved with certain dark characters. And it's quite funny in spots. I just finished watching the first season on Netflix. It's sick, funny. I mean, you're dealing with real sociopaths here, but there's a lot of truth in it. And hey, just the other day on that show, The Prophet, Marcus Lemonis, he is this guy who invests in hopeless failing companies, small businesses, becomes their partner and turns them into raging successes, maybe. He was out studying the marijuana industry in Colorado and in California. Well, he didn't want to put any money in because it's still technically illegal under federal law. He really did examine the marketing, the merchandising taking place, business plans of the people, of the participants. It really was a fascinating show. Highly recommend if you can watch it, watch it. But hey, more importantly, getting into golden opportunities, Commitment of Traders report has turned decidedly negative, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's an indicator of what the big players in the futures market are doing in silver and gold. And it has tended to work over the past decade. When speculators get too excited, they tend to go too long, and then that causes the prices of whatever they're trading to go down. You know, and that's been happening in gold and silver on and off for the past decade. And lately it went positive. In other words, the Commitment of Traders report indicated that gold and silver ought to go up. And that's what happened. We had a little mini rally in gold and silver just lately here. And now, very quickly, it swung the other way. So all of a sudden, that indicator is negative, implying that gold and silver are getting close to the top of this current rally, with gold at close to $1,300 an ounce, and that at some point in the not too distant future, there will be a trend change and it'll start going back down for a while. You know, this is no big deal if you're a stacker. You know, you want it to go down so you can buy more next month. Yeah. But if you're looking for an entry point for buying, for instance, mining stocks, then the Commitment of Traders report is a pretty useful indicator because it tells you sort of kind of what the general tone of the market is going to be over the next, let's say, 6 months. And right now it's saying that the recent positive tone is probably going to shift to negative at some point in the next month or two and then stay negative for a few months after that, which means that if you're looking at a couple of junior mining stocks, for instance, you can either put in nice lowball offers right now and have a decent chance of getting hit, or just wait a while, see if the stock price goes down a bit along with gold and silver, and then buy a little lower.
Mm-hmm.
Or take some profits that you've generated lately. So it's, you know, it's not a big deal, these squiggles of $100 or $200 an ounce in gold, because the overall trend is going to be up for, you know, the next generation, I think, based on our financial screw-ups. So you don't want to be too cute and try to time the market based on this. But at the margin, it's a useful piece of information, especially if you're if you are thinking about what your entry point should be for a stock that you have your eye on.
Yes, agreed. It's definitely been a very reliable indicator for, like you said, the past decade. Somebody discovered it in the bank reports that the banks have to make to the controller of the currency, I believe. And from that point on, once it was discovered, then it became a big deal. And it's been alarmingly accurate. If we look at the price right now, gold's right at the 1290 range. If you believe in conspiracies to suppress the price of precious metals, you got to believe they don't really want it to go over 1300. So maybe they're going to try another last-ditch effort to stop it. But it looks like it's going to go here at some point, but we might repeat this process four or five more times before it goes, John.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen in the future, because at some point, the Commitment of Traders report is going to be swamped by fundamentals. For instance, let us get into an actual fight with North Korea or somebody else, and then you see gold just go through the roof. Wouldn't matter what the futures contract guys are doing. let there be a recession and a bear market in equities, which is coming one of these days based on history, and let the central banks of the world push interest rates down to negative territory, that would ignite gold and silver too, you would think, because all of a sudden, the 1% a year storage cost that a vault will charge you for keeping your gold bars actually looks good compared to what you get on a bank account. So the disadvantage that gold has as something that doesn't pay interest and actually costs you for storage is wiped out by negative interest rates, because once bonds charge you to invest in them and bank accounts charge you for keeping your money in the bank, then all of a sudden you might as well own real money because the cash flow implications are pretty much the same. And that'll be great for gold. So one of these days, something like that is going to happen. And then we'll just see gold and silver take off. But until that day, the Commitment of Traders report has been and probably will continue to be a decent indicator, you know, a nice data point to include in your analysis of this market.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see anything that's standing in its way for the time being. But at some point, yes, it's going to spring limitations. Plus, everyone knows about it, John. You can't forget about that. It's so used, widely used, that, you know, that makes its eventual downfall virtually certain. Just like when the employment reports come out and gold gets hit, right? Funny how that one works.
That's another one that's pretty funny. Well, whenever the government makes a really big announcement, that tends to be bad for gold. And I think in part that's because the announcements are couched in terms that are dishonestly optimistic. And it's only after we look at what the real numbers are under the surface that the headline that the government put out turns out to be not really true, you know, and then you get a recovery in the risk-off assets like gold and silver that were knocked down by the really optimistic report. So I think that's just that's another thing that's kind of part of the game, and it's a trading signal because it kind of tends to recur over and over again. But for most people who are adding to their long-term holdings of precious metals, it's something to ignore because these little squiggles don't mean anything to the eventual price of gold. If it's going to $10,000 an ounce, do you really care whether you sold at 1,302 and bought back at 1,290 over the next couple of months? You know, it doesn't matter. It really won't matter.
No, certainly not. And, you know, it's just interesting the way these patterns form, and there's no real rational explanation for the patterns. The real explanation appears to be the attempt at manipulation, right? I mean, that seems to be the best explanation for these patterns, because they have no other reason to exist, do they?
Every market is manipulated these days, and we know that because all the big banks have pled guilty or at least settled with government regulators on charges that they were manipulating, you know, interest rate markets and other industrial metals and pretty much everything you can think of, the big banks are manipulating. So why not gold and silver? It would be a surprise if they weren't manipulated, because everything else is. So until the people who are doing it go to jail, get their names in the paper or something like that, this is going to continue, because the fines the banks are paying are minuscule compared to the profits they're generating by manipulating markets.
And just like the guys demonstrating for the pro-nationalist white power march, their identities are known, the cloak is taken off, all of a sudden there's consequences that that are quite surprising, aren't they?
Well, yeah. Transparency is the best disinfectant. There's an old saying like that, or I think it's sunshine is the best disinfectant.
But disinfectant. Yeah.
But basically, if we know who's doing what, then that limits the ability of the people who are committing crimes to commit those crimes. And right now, we don't know who's doing what. We know the big banks pay a lot of fines and stuff. We don't know who within the big banks committed the crime that the bank has to pay a fine for, you know. And not only don't they go to jail, but we don't even see their names, you know. And Eric Holder, Obama's top lawyer, came out and actually said that they don't feel like they can prosecute bankers because it might destabilize the financial system, which basically gave the big banks a green light to go ahead and commit any crimes they want to because they're immune from prosecution.
So yeah, they're too big jail.
Yeah, you make $10 billion scamming some market, and then you pay the government $3 billion in a fine. Well, you paid a fine, but you still made $7 billion, you know, and that's something they're doing over and over and over again in pretty much every market you can think of. So which is another reason why people are so mad. That's one of the reasons that Occupy Wall Street resonated for a lot of people, because it's clear, even though we don't completely understand the crimes that the big banks are committing, it's clear they are committing big, major crimes, major financial crimes. And in any kind of a crime, there's a winner and a loser, right? So if the big banks win, that means the rest of us have to lose. Some way, somehow, they're taking money away from us. And we know that. We don't know how exactly, because it's too complicated for us to understand, but it's happening. And so, you know, protesting against Wall Street feels good. It at least it feels like you're doing something. But of course, it had no impact because these guys are anonymous and bulletproof, and they just went on with business as usual. So again, fundamentals will eventually swamp all of these games, and reality will assert itself, and we'll figure out the truth about all this stuff. But it appears to be a ways away. You know, it's going to take a while before we have the kind of crisis that forces the kind of investigation that gives us the information we wish we had now. That'll come eventually. But I think the guys who are committing the crimes now are going to get away with it. They're going to get to retire with huge, huge fortunes, and then go off on their yachts and be, you know, rich, high prestige people for the rest of their lives. And it's a shame.
I think you're correct on that one, John. So, and a lot of them have been supposedly working for the good of the people, but we know how that works out. In any event, it's time to retreat for this week. And questions, comments, kl@carrylutz.com. That's the email address. You find John's work over at dollarcollapse.com. Subscribe to both of our newsletters. Twitter feeds @CarrieLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. John, we will catch up next week.
Great, Carrie. Talk to you then.
All right. You be well.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.